Chapter 11. By the Lake. We started walking straight to the lake, where I was sure Flora had gone to be with the dreadful ghost.
"Are you sure she's going to be there, miss?"
asked Mrs. Gross. "Yes," I said. "She's going to be at the place where she and I saw together what I told you about."
"When she pretended not to see?"
"Yes," I said again. "I've always been sure she wanted to go back there alone, and now her brother has managed it for her." Mrs. Gross suddenly stopped.
"Do you suppose they really talk about the ghosts?"
"Of course they do," I said confidently. "If we could hear the things they say, we would be shocked."
"And if Flora is there?"
"Yes." I waited for her to finish.
"Then is Miss Jessel there too?"
"Of course she is. You will see."
"Oh, no,"
my friend cried, refusing to move. I walked on, and by the time I reached the lake, Mrs. Gross was close behind me. Although she was very frightened, she knew that she was safer with me. When we reached the lake, we could not see Flora anywhere. I heard Mrs. Gross breathe out heavily, as if she were pleased that we could not see the child. I felt her hand pull my arm and knew what she meant. She wanted to go back to the house. I shook my head and said to her,
"No, no, wait. She has taken the boat to the other side of the lake."
"Then why can't we see her?"
Mrs. Gross asked.
"She has used the boat to go over there and then has managed to hide it," I replied.
"On her own? That child?"
"She's not alone," I said,
feeling as I often did that Mrs. Gross did not want to argue with me when I was so certain. "We must walk round to the other side of the lake," I said, starting along the path again. The grass was damp and long, and there were tree branches hanging down, so walking was difficult. About halfway round the lake, I stopped so Mrs. Gross could rest, then gave her my arm so that we could help each other. Soon, we found the boat where I expected it to be. It was amazing that a little girl had managed to take it there, but nothing could surprise me now. We went through a gate at the end of the path, and then we both cried out, "There she is!" Flora was a little way from us, standing on the grass and smiling as if she had expected us to come. She bent down and picked up a big, ugly, dead leaf and waited, smiling, for us to approach her. She did everything in silence. Mrs. Gross was the first to break the spell. She threw herself down onto her knees and hugged the child to her chest. Flora was clearly happy to be hugged by Mrs. Gross, but there was a serious look on her face as she saw me over the housekeeper's shoulder. I knew I could not give her a simple hug and felt very jealous of Mrs. Gross. Flora dropped the big dead leaf on the ground. She knew, I thought, that she could not pretend any longer. It was Flora who spoke first.
"Where are your coats and hats?"
she asked.
"And where are your coat and hat, my dear?" I asked.
She did not answer, but asked instead,
"And where is Miles?"
Suddenly, all the things that I had not said over many weeks seemed to pour into my head in confusion. I heard myself say, as if something had made me say it, "I'll tell you, if you'll tell me."
"Tell you what?"
she said, interrupting me. Mrs. Gross's eyes turned to mine, as if she were warning me not to say anything more. But I spoke clearly and confidently. "Where, my dear, is Miss Jessel?" I had never spoken that name in front of Flora. Now that I had broken the silence and said it, the child looked horrified. I saw the look on her face at the same time as I heard Mrs. Gross gasp and scream. Then I gasped myself and got hold of Mrs. Gross's arm and said, "She's there! She's there!" Miss Jessel stood on the opposite side of the lake, exactly as she had stood the other time, pale and dressed in black. I remember a strange feeling of joy that I had brought her there. She was there, so I was neither cruel nor mad. She was there for poor, frightened Mrs. Gross, but most of all, she was there for Flora. I could feel the evil in that figure. In those first few seconds, I saw Mrs. Gross looking where I was pointing and knew that she saw what I saw. But Flora was looking at me. I was prepared for her to pretend not to see the ghost, but I was not prepared for that angry, cold look. I was certain that she could see the figure across the lake, but I had to defend myself. "She's there, you unhappy little creature! There, there, there! And you can see her as well as you can see me!" Flora still stared at me, and I was horrified to see that she looked more like an old woman than a child. Then suddenly, Mrs. Gross cried out, "What a dreadful thing to say, miss! What can you see?" Shocked, I got hold of her and turned her towards the figure, pointing again. "Don't you see her exactly as we see her? Only look, dearest woman, look!" She looked, and then she turned and faced me, groaning. It was as if she were saying, "I want to see it for you, but I cannot." She immediately spoke to Flora. "She isn't there, little lady, and nobody is there, and you never see anything, my sweet child. How can poor Miss Jessel be there when we know she's dead? We know, don't we, love? It's all a mistake and a joke, and we'll go home as fast as we can." They stood facing me, both of them against me. Flora continued to give me that cold, hard stare. Suddenly, her extraordinary childish loveliness had disappeared, and she was almost ugly.
"I don't know what you mean," she screamed. "I see nobody. I see nothing. I never have. I think you're cruel. I don't like you."
Then she turned and hid her dreadful little face in Mrs. Gross's skirt, hugging her closely. She burst into loud tears, and then there was an angry cry.
"Take me away! Take me away! Oh, take me away from her!"
"From me?" I gasped.
"From you! From you!"
she shouted. Mrs. Gross, very shocked, looked at me without speaking. All I could do was look again at that figure on the opposite side of the lake. She was standing still, as if listening to our voices, aware of the tragic drama in front of her and refusing to help me. The child had spoken each of her sharp little words as if someone had given them to her to speak. "Of course I've lost you," I said. "That evil figure over there has told you what to say and do. I've done my best, but I've lost you. Goodbye." Then I spoke to Mrs. Gross, who was terribly upset. She knew that something dreadful had happened, but did not understand it. "Go, go," I said. She took the child away as fast as she could move, back towards the house. I do not remember what happened just after they had gone. I only know I became aware that I was very cold and could smell damp earth just beneath me. I had obviously burst into tears, thrown myself down and cried and cried. When I lifted my head, the day had almost ended, and I made my tired way along the edge of the grey lake back to the house. As I passed the place where the boat had been, I thought how clever Flora was. That evening, I saw neither Mrs. Gross nor Flora. When I went to my room to change my clothes, I noticed that all Flora's little things had gone. She had spent the night with Mrs. Gross. When a servant brought tea to the schoolroom for me, as she usually did, I was sitting by the fire, and I did not ask about Miles. He could do what he wanted now. He was free. And what he wanted to do, it seemed, was to come in at about 8 o'clock and sit in silence. The servant had taken away the tea things, and I had blown out my candle and pulled my chair closer to the fire. I was so cold that I felt as if I could never again be warm. So when Miles came in, I was sitting with my thoughts in the light from the flames. He paused for a moment by the door, looking at me. Then, as if he wanted to share my thoughts, he came and sat in a chair at the other side of the fire. We sat there, in complete silence, but he wanted, I felt, to be with me.